Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School. Here, you'll get fresh insight from the people at the very top of the tech companies who make the products we love. Remember, you can learn product management live online. Visit productschool.com to discover our new certificate path. There, you can also join the world's largest community of PMs and network with the leaders from these podcasts at our online events. There's something happening almost every day.
Today, we're here with Justin Bauer. He's the Executive Vice President of Product at Amplitude. Hey, Justin.
Hello. Thank you, Carlos, for having me.
All right. Well, we have a lot of things to celebrate, but let's start from the very beginning. How did you get started?
Yeah. So like many product leaders, I didn't start my career in product. I actually didn't even start in tech. I actually grew up in a small town in Iowa. I moved out west after my undergrad to work as an econometrician, actually. Had the opportunity actually to work with a guy named Daniel McFadden, who won the Nobel Prize in economics based off of his work in discrete choice modeling, which is something that I had done in undergrad. And I thought I was going to move out here and then maybe go get my PhD, really grew passionate about figuring out ways that I could apply some of these analytical skills that I had to the world of business. I happened to meet a partner at McKinsey who was building out their analytics practice. And so I moved down to LA to help him do that. And that was actually where I got my first taste of product, which is pretty rare. Not many people work at product and consulting companies, but I was actually part of the team that built McKinsey's first enterprise software package. And after doing that, I could not go back to the world of consulting. I had so much fun and really saw the scale that software can have in helping change people's lives. And so I've been building product ever since.
That's very interesting. We've seen a lot of non-engineers breaking into product management and be very successful. Obviously, the Silicon Valley story before was, you have to be a software engineer. But we definitely see a lot of consultants and data people who are able to race through the ranks. And I think those skill sets can apply very well to the product world, as obviously you are a great example of that. Obviously, this week, you guys broke the internet with the announcement of your newest funding round. So why don't you just tell us again what that means for your company?
Yeah, for sure. It was a really exciting moment for us. I think it's just one step in the ultimate journey of our mission, which is to help the world build better products. It's something that I've been passionate about for a while, something that our co-founders, Spencer, Curtis, and Jeffrey, really center the team, the company on when they started it. And I've been lucky enough to be part of that journey. I joined 5 years ago and have seen us scale in the number of companies that we've helped build better product experiences and really excited about continuing to do that into the future.
Well, that's great. You guys are joining the unicorn club. you know how we always say that as a product person, you have to fall in love with the problem and not just with the solution. So in your particular case, what are some of those problems that you are passionate about?
Yeah. So at the highest level, we talked about the mission, helping companies build better products. I think there's a lot that's written and talked about in the art of product, but not as much on the science of product. And I think that's really where we're trying to come in to help solve that problem. How do you understand user behavior at scale? How do you make sure that you're consistently evaluating the impact of the changes that you're making? And how do you empower your company to make decisions off of customer data, to take action on that, to ultimately build that better experience? And there are a number of challenges within each of those places, but ultimately that's the core problem that we're trying to help our company solve.
And in your case, I know that you also started a company in the analytics, well, in gaming, but you know, it was a lot of analytics. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about your experience as a founder first, that then ended up working in product at a large organization?
Yeah. So I had the opportunity to start a gaming company. It actually started as a passion project with a couple friends, and it ended up taking off. And as you can imagine, in gaming, a lot of decisions are made based off of the data. And so we used a number of the different kind of products that existed at the time to help us make sure we understood, you know, our users, understood where they're getting blocked, trying to find things like our aha moments and the like that many, you know, many people who are here are trying to do right now if they're early stage companies. And as part of that journey, kind of realized that there are a lot of things that didn't exist in the market that we really needed to help us build a better product. And so ended up building a number of those capabilities ourselves, and that actually got me inspired to potentially start my own analytics company, because I saw how important these were to decisions I was making. And I happened to be working with a number of startups in LA, helping them kind of make the same decisions. But luckily, I, around that time, happened to meet Spencer, who's the one of the co-founders of Amplitude, through a friend. And they had just started on their path. They actually had the first version of their product out. And for me, we really shared in that vision. And ultimately, and I think this is true for anyone who is thinking about starting a company, like the real reason to do it is because you want to change the world, because you're just so passionate about the problem that you want to solve, that you'll do whatever it takes to solve that problem. And so for me, I thought the only way to do that was to start a company. But once I met Spencer and saw that we were aligned in that vision, it was a no-brainer. Like, I knew that I could work with him to ultimately do that. And that was actually 5 years ago at about this time. And I remember after meeting him, calling up my wife and saying, I'm super excited about this. What do you think about considering moving to San Francisco? And she was like, okay, let's see where this goes. And we made the bet and haven't looked back.
Well, here you are. So definitely the right bet, the right team. So what would you say are the, there's obviously some overlap between a founder and CEO and a product manager. In your own experience, what are some of those overlapping skills?
Yeah. So I think especially at the kind of CEO founder level, there's definitely overlap. And so like if you're an early stage founder, like finding product market fit is obviously critical. Like at the end, you have to start with a world-class product. Like, I don't think any company can be successful without starting with a world-class product. And that obviously is also the job of a product leader, is to build a world-class product. And so there's a high level of overlap there. I'd also say that, you know, as the skill sets, you know, as the company scales, I think it's really critical to be customer obsessed as both a CEO as well as a product leader. So you really have to start from the customer. And so I think those skill sets really overlap really well. I do think there are a lot of things that actually don't necessarily overlap. And so I think it's important to call those out, because there is a lot of the like, is the PM a mini CEO kind of conversation. A lot's been written on that. But I think, you know, some of the key differences that I've seen, at least. So one is, you know, PMs create vision to inspire, and they drive change through influence. And they typically don't manage a lot of people. In fact, the product leader within any executive team probably has the least number of people reporting to them. That's certainly true for myself compared to my peers. And I think that's true at most companies. And the reason for that is I drive change through influence, right? I influence the rest of the company and actually think about the company level strategy and the product level strategy. And so I partner very closely with the CEO. The CEO is very different, though. The CEO actually manages, obviously, the entire executive team, manages a very large number of people, also has very large budgets and fiduciary responsibilities that product leaders don't typically have. And so I do think kind of the people management and fiduciary responsibilities are at least two jobs that are critical for CEOs that aren't necessarily as important. Now, obviously, people management is very important for PM, but for a product leader. But those are things that happen, I think, at a different level of scale. And then the last one that's actually changing, so I'm really happy to see this, is kind of owning the number. Like, so do you own revenue? As a CEO, like, you are accountable to driving revenue and growth of the company. Traditionally, product was not, but this is actually changing quite a bit, which is really exciting. We're now seeing that product actually does own revenue and is driving that, because digital products are actually what's driving growth. And so it's exciting to kind of see that transition happening. And I do think will be an important step of product leaders ultimately becoming CEOs of these enterprise companies, because they're getting more and more of that responsibility of owning the number.
I agree with you. I see the same trend happening with the PMs owning, in some cases, part of the P&L, if not the P&L. What are other myths and misconceptions that you've seen throughout your career in product management?
Yeah, I think the biggest one is that the PM's job is to come up with all the ideas and solutions and decide what should be built. Whereas I believe that the best product leaders, they own the problem, which you talked about, like falling in love with the problem, and then they make sure the organization delivers the best solutions to solve those problems. That doesn't mean they have to come up with those solutions. It doesn't even mean they have to come up with the problems. It means they have to get the organization to understand that, frame it well. And so the best product leaders are facilitators, they're framers, they inspire people, and they create an environment that really empowers anyone in the organization to develop innovative ideas or solutions. It's not about them, right? It's about the company, it's about the product, it's about the customer. And I certainly think that can be a misconception when people want to get into product. And so that's something I really try to evangelize.
Well, I'm a big believer in lifelong learning and seeing your career growth. It's incredible. You started your own company, joined a company that was almost a small product, and now it is a unicorn. So for you, in order to continue growing at the same pace as your company, as an EVP of product, for real, not just with the title, you know, in the startups, everyone has a very big title, but you guys are not a startup anymore. How were you able to continue learning personally as the company learned?
Yeah. So one of our values of the company is growth mindset. And I think something that I really, really believe in. And I think at any stage, you can learn and should be learning. I think about learning on a couple dimensions. I think about there's both the how. So how do we build product? How do we scale a company? And then also, what are we delivering? So learning about the customer and understanding technology changes. And I do focus a lot of my energy on making sure that I'm working on both. So on the how and kind of how to scale myself, I think, yeah, as you said, the type of problems that exist at a 10-person company look very different than a 100-person company and very different than a 1,000-person company. I've had opportunities to work at companies of different scales, but I've not led product through all of those different sizes of companies. And so certainly I'm learning a lot in terms of what that means to actually be leading a company at the stages that we're at right now. And to learn about that I surround myself with people who've done it before. So I go and talk to other product leaders. I was talking recently to the head of product at PagerDuty, who's probably like a couple years ahead of us. And so learning from her in terms of like, what were the scaling challenges that she saw at this stage, that I'm aware of that. And I surround myself, I've got mentors as well that are leading, you know, companies that I would like to to become, or ultimately help lead Amplitude to become. And then I read a lot. And so I read at least an article a day, but probably close to 20 to 30. It's very, like, I think there's so much great content that's out there. For me, I try to find those opportunities in the morning or end of day just to kind of read a couple articles just to see what I can learn. So those are areas that I kind of think about the how. In terms of the problem, I spend a lot of time with customers and I learn a lot from our customers. And I think it's really important to approach your job in that fashion of how do you learn from your customers. I think too many times people go into customer calls trying to sell or validate kind of what they're building or working on, versus I think it's really important to think about evaluating what you're building or working on. So I actually look to try to invalidate my assumptions when I go and talk to customers. Those are the most interesting times when a customer actually says something I didn't expect to hear. Because those are pockets of learning that many times lead towards innovation. So I spend a lot of time with customers. I try to do 20%+ of my time. My team spends 20-30% of their time talking to customers. I think it's the most important thing that a product leader can do to ultimately make sure that they're building a better product.
That's very interesting, the last point that you mentioned, because it almost sounds counterintuitive as you get more and more removed from the day-to-day, how you are able to still connect not just with your team, but with your customers. And I ask this question to other product leaders and CEOs, and I see the pattern. Most successful product leaders, they still spend a lot of time with customers, even in a way that doesn't scale, which leads me to the next question. It's very typical Silicon Valley motto to say, you have to do things that don't scale, especially at the very beginning when you are looking for product market fit. But what about when you are post product market fit? What about when you are at that stage of the company? Is there anything that you're intentionally doing yourself that doesn't scale, but you still see value in doing?
Yeah, so it really is the customer. And it's been that throughout history. So that's the hardest thing to scale, because like I only have a set number of hours, and the time I'm spending with customers can, like, I can't actually grow that. But I hold on to that very dearly. And I think it's just important, for one, I think it just sets an important, like, you know, do the things that you want the team and the company to also do. Cause, but people, you can say whatever you want, but people judge you and try to emulate you by your actions. And so when my team and the company sees that I'm talking to customers all the time, that I'm out in the field, like, I guess the field now is virtually, but working with prospects and working with the sales team and even doing things like this one, I actually stopped doing recently because it got a little bit too much for me. But up until about 6 months ago, I read every single customer feedback that came in. And that did not scale. And the reason why I do that is because it's an important signal to the company of how important the customer is. And I think it's something when, like, you know, a CSM that maybe I've never, a customer success manager that I've never met, or a customer support person writes up customer feedback and then I respond to it as the head of product. Like, that, I think, shows that person that I really care about that. And I'm really appreciative of the fact that they took the time to write that up. And so for me, like, the overall thing is, what's the most important thing that matters to you? And then don't, like, obviously try to figure out how to scale it, but those are the things you can do that not scale. And for us, it is customers part of the team. That's our number one principle. And so I spend a lot of my unscalable time actually focused on the customer.
Another unscalable thing is obviously building, and at least directly. So you've done a good job building your own team of product people. As a product person myself, I find this very challenging sometimes. I have a lot of strong opinions about the vision of the company or the vision of the product. In your case, you probably feel the same, but you also hired a bunch of smart people who are helping you shape that vision. So how do you balance the influence that you have on the roadmap of your product with the influence that your team has?
Yeah. So the first thing I just want to call it, so the strong opinions, like, that should never go away. I think it's really important that product leaders have strong opinions, loosely held. And the loosely held is an important part of this, but I do think it's important to have opinions. I found that as the job of the PM honestly doesn't change, it's just the scope changes. And so that's kind of where I think about where I spend my time. Like, my job is to think about the next 2 to 3 years. Like, that's the scope. Like, and so it is at the, like, and work, obviously working with Spencer, our CEO, thinking about the company level vision and the product vision, ultimately for where we want to be, not even in 2021 or 2022, but like 2023. And so that's like a key part of my job. And I'm the only person that is doing that. Like, obviously I work with my team to think about that, but I'm accountable ultimately to that. And so that's where I have strong opinions. And then the other part of my job is thinking about where do we allocate resources appropriately, right? And you're as a PM, you do that too, right? So, like, are we going to spend this? Like, I'm not at the week level or the month level or even the quarter level many times, but I'm thinking about that at like the half year, the year. Like, are we placing the bets in the right way in terms of the overall resources of the company? So those are my, like, responsibilities, because I'm the only one that actually, in partnership with my peers, can really do that. And then now it's just about empowerment. Like, so now can I empower the great people that I've hired to do the same thing, but for their scope? And yes, I have opinions at that level too. And so I'll bring those opinions. But I also believe fundamentally that innovation comes from those that are closest to the problem and the technology and the customer. And the reality is, like, that's not actually going to be me. Like, my PMs are going to be the ones closest for their problem to their customers, the ultimately the technology can solve and the underlying problem. And so it's really important that I trust them, that they're ultimately going to be coming up with the right problems to focus on. And obviously I work with them on making sure that they're thinking through it the right way, that I'm asking the right questions, but I try not to let my opinion override. It's more make sure I'm asking the right questions so that they feel even more confident in kind of what they're trying to accomplish.
I admire what you just said. I think it takes a lot of awareness to realize that the best solutions won't come from one person, and that the impact of the company is not just day to day, but like the long-term vision. And I feel even empowered by listening to you to talk about this and how you think about building product teams. Another thing that I've seen in the product space in general is that there's more and more technology built for us product people. Before, we were piggybacking on spreadsheets, PowerPoints, or whatever it was. I can't even imagine what you were using for your own analytics solution when you had your gaming company. So obviously, Amplitude is a good example of that, especially in the product analytics industry. What are some of the best practices that you would recommend for people to get the most out of your product?
So I think the first place and something that, when we work with companies, the first thing we do is to think about the North Star. So like, I always start with vision. I think every great product leader should be starting with vision. And so we think of the North Star really as the representation of that. Where are you going? And then the underlying North Star metric and constellation of metrics that matter for you. And so I think starting there is really important. It's funny, I'm sure people here are familiar with the concept of OKRs. And I always like to say they're called OKRs, not KROs, for a reason. You always start with the objective and then identify the metrics that will help you understand if you're accomplishing the objective, not the other way around. And I think too many times people think, well, we got to improve retention. So then let's figure out all the different things we could do to improve retention. And that inspires kind of a growth hacking mentality that I think we've learned as an industry is not actually the right way. There's a lot of great tactics that came out of the growth hacking movement, but you got to start with ultimately what's the vision and the strategy. And then you think about how do you actually optimize your experience to help you accomplish that. And so that's what the North Star is. It's to make sure that you actually focus correctly. You're thinking about the metrics that matter to you. And then you can then actually measure those and then see if the things you're building are actually helping you improve them. But we always like to start there. So that's really important. So that's one example of ways to get kind of the most out of the product. I would say, everyone always thinks about Amplitude and driving kind of the quantitative side, the science side. But it's actually also great. And I think this is one of those little known hacks within the product, is that it's actually great for doing targeted user research. Because you can now target your research based off of how people used your product. So we actually do that where anytime we release a new feature, we actually set it up. So based on kind of how far in depth to that feature you got, we will then send you Calendly links that hit our user research calendar. And then it's like release the feature, like 4 days later, you actually got a bunch of customers that you can talk to and you know which ones successfully used the feature and which ones did not. And I think that's helped accelerate our user testing and user research quite a bit. So that's like a nice little hack that people do. What else? A/B testing. So people do run a lot of A/B tests. I find that in terms of how to run A/B tests, so there's a lot that's written out there and don't need to go into that. But I find that not enough people actually think about evaluating the why behind the A/B test. Why did it succeed or why did it fail? And that's actually the most important learning, I think, that you can get to inform your broader mental model and understanding of your product. And so people actually use Amplitude for that. They do use Amplitude to evaluate the A/B test, but I think it's more interesting to actually look at the people that found success in the A/B test and actually understand what did they do? What did they do differently? Maybe you can use that to actually, when you do the full launch out, even get more users to actually find success there. Or if it failed, why did it fail? Go and talk to those users. And so I think that's another way that people use Amplitude to help them build a better product.
So for the parts of the product development process that can be done with Amplitude, I know you have a big partner ecosystem with integrations both ways. What are other tools that your team uses internally as part of their product stack?
Yeah. Certainly, and this is not just for product teams, but Slack is a critical tool. I'm sure everyone here uses Slack. We actually have an integration with Slack that makes it really easy to like share a link and it unfurls it so you can see the chart like in your channel. And I think it's just, once again, it goes back to the job, of a PM and a product leader is to align and inspire, and metrics help with alignment. And so you want to make sure you're constantly communicating with, your design and engineering counterparts, and Slack is a great way to do that, obviously. So that's a key one. We use Figma and the design team. I think that's becoming even increasingly more important in this world of working remote. It's a great collaborative tool, and so one that we've that I'm now starting to see not just designers use, but PMs and engineers actually use that as well. We recently adopted Product Board. So that'll be a new one for us, and we're mostly focused on the kind of repository of customer feedback. We were previously using Jira for that, and that wasn't scaling. And so we started using Product Board, and so hopefully, you know, at some point in time in the future, I can report on how that has gone. But early signs are great there. I mentioned Jira, so we do use Jira. Some teams use Trello as well. And then obviously we use Amplitude a ton. So that's like one that we're using a ton for product analytics, but also in the data management side, making sure that we're creating the right instrumentation and Amplitude can do some of the QA of that and validating to make sure everything's correct and also transforming things that end up getting through that are buggy. So that's an important part of our stack, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we call it drinking your own champagne. I used to say...
Yes, exactly. Yeah, the dog food is not as...
I used to say eating your own dog food, but that doesn't sound great. But drinking your own champagne sounds
better. Champagne sounds much better.
So my last question before we wrap up is about the future. How do you see the product management industry as a whole, and where do you think are the biggest opportunities for product people right now?
Yeah. So I think it's a really exciting time to be a product person, honestly. And it comes back to something we talked about earlier, which is that, most companies now, and especially now, we were seeing this trend even before COVID, but like most enterprise companies, fastest growth was happening in digital. And it's funny because we've been talking about software is eating the world and all these things but it's actually happening now. And I'm seeing a number of people that were, customers of mine back when Amplitude was small and were 20-person startups that now are actually running large organizations within Fortune 500 companies, because large enterprises are realizing that if they are not able to innovate and drive growth through digital, like then they're actually not going to survive. And the skill sets that PMs have are the right ones to actually lead these companies through this digital revolution. And so I think this is a really, really exciting moment to do that, to actually be the leader. I do believe that kind of the chief product officer is going to be the next key leader of the executive seat, and will be many of the people today that are leading products will be the CEOs of the future. And so I think everyone here, I'm sure is already sold that product is the right path, but I hopefully now they're even more encouraged because I believe the skill sets that we bring to our discipline honestly are the right ones to help every company be successful in the future.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Justin. It was a pleasure to learn from you. Is there anything you would like to add?
No, this was great. I really appreciate you taking the time. Great questions, Carlos. And as always, really, really excited about the work that you all are doing. And so I appreciate you giving me the time.
All right. Well, let's keep it up. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.